Hello, you are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. I'm Zachary Zonizer, and this is part four in my five-part series of America's involvement in World War I. Today, we will be focusing on the Treaty of Versailles. I'm going to try and get through it all, but there is a lot to talk about. When you start to really study World War I, what you start to realize is that without World War I, there would really be no Stalin and probably no World War II or Cold War or arms race after that. But when we focus on the Treaty of Versailles specifically, if the Treaty of Versailles had been a bit more reasonable, perhaps more well thought out and future looking when it was written, there would probably be no Hitler, there would probably be no fascist Germany at all. Because of the Treaty of Versailles, we saw the Middle East get carved up by bitter men more concerned with war reparations than stability in the Middle East, and by extension thereof, without the Treaty of Versailles, there is probably no 9/11 or war on terrorism today. The Treaty of Versailles has such far-reaching effects, we are still seeing its effects even now. So while it might be just a bit dry to talk about the Treaty of Versailles, please understand that it is one of the most important and defining pieces of all of World War I. Now, while the armistice that actually stopped the fighting in World War I was signed on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, that is November 11, 1918, it actually took the Allies about 6 months to come up with the Treaty of Versailles. They ended up signing it on June 28, 1919, exactly 5 years after the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand that started this whole Great War to begin with. The majority of the mandates in the Treaty of Versailles were focused on Germany and making Germany pay for the war. It did require Germany to give up quite a bit of its own territory, and it also required it to renounce sovereignty over its former colonies. It reduced the amount of military that Germany was allowed to have at any given time, also how big they could build ships and how many guns they could have, things like that. But really, the most significant thing it did to Germany was that it required Germany to accept responsibility for all the damages and losses in the war, including the damages and losses caused by Germany and her allies. The treaty required Germany to compensate the Allied powers, and it also established an Allied Reparation Commission to determine the exact amount which Germany would pay, as well as the form that payment would take. The Germans would also have to pay for Allied occupation costs and buy food and raw materials to support those occupations. Now, whether or not this was a reasonable treaty or not for the Germans is up to the individual to decide, but the German people at the time absolutely hated this treaty, and it did send their economy into a massive depression. It sort of sowed the seeds for the rise of the eventual Nazi Party. This is the period in German history where we see inflation get so bad that wheelbarrows of money weren't able to even buy loaves of bread. German currency became so weak that they weren't even able to pay their own reparations with hard currency. They had to pay it with gold and raw materials, things like that. The actual causes of the post-war hyperinflation are debated even today, but Germans at the time did mostly blame that treaty, and some economists estimate that about one-third of the hyperinflation was caused by reparations from that treaty. And the Germans were not the only ones, just a little bit floored by the level of these reparations. Actually, American and British critics and contemporaries noticed that the reparation numbers were maybe just a bit high. Germany actually wouldn't wait too long to start violating the terms of the treaty, actually. According to the letter of the treaty, Germany would have to dissolve its general staff. And while they did this publicly, they actually reestablished their general staff secretly in a cover organization. Now, if you are curious about my personal opinion of the Treaty of Versailles and whether or not it was reasonable or fair, my opinion mostly falls in line with John Maynard Keynes, who was the principal representative of the British Treasury at the Paris Peace Conferences. He believed the sums of money being asked of the German people in reparations were many times more than it was possible for Germany to repay, and that those would produce drastic instability. To quote him on the matter, "I believe the campaign for securing out of Germany the general cost of the war was one of the most serious acts of political unwisdom for which our statesmen have ever been responsible." On the other hand, as the saying goes, hindsight is 20/20. Britain, France, and America had no way of knowing that a man like Hitler would rise from the ashes of the destroyed German economy. And in comparison to the treaty Germany imposed on Russia after Russia's defeat, the Treaty of Versailles was actually quite subdued. Well, thank you for joining me this morning. This has been just a little bit about the Treaty of Versailles. There is still quite a lot to say. I haven't decided if I'm going to do part 5 on the Treaty of Versailles just yet, or if I want to talk about the post-war depression. Because again, we still see economic ramifications of World War I even today. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that we might still have a gold standard today if we hadn't entered into World War I. Anyway, thank you for joining me for this history segment. Remember, if you like these, you can find them online at kggfradio.com. Click on the On Demand tab and find a history segment that looks interesting to you. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.